and welcome to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. My name is Peter Bean, and I'll be your co-host for today. Joining me is Andrew Hendricks. How's it going, Andrew?
Very well. How are you doing today?
Fantastic. All right, so today we are going to talk about Dalton Pompey. Now, we've got an interview lined up with Dalton a little bit later on in the show, but before we get to that, I wanted to just have you give our listeners a bit of a run-through on the somewhat incredible year that Dalton's had so far.
Well, you said it yourself, incredible. I mean, this kid's on an absolute tear. He's playing with the Dunedin Blue Jays, you know, the A-ball affiliate of Toronto. And, you know, he's just going out there and he's hitting, he's getting on base, he's stealing bases. He's 14 for 14 in stolen base attempts, and he's hitting .363. You know, it's unreal, really, what he's put together. And we always knew that the talent was there. We knew that it would come out. You know, and it was just a matter of time, but he really seems to be putting it all together right now with Dunedin, and it's an exciting time for him.
And the results have shown. I mean, in the last week and a half alone, he's collected two awards and collected an award for last year as well.
That's right. I mean, he was given a Golden Glove for his play in Lansing last year, which should come as no surprise because out in the field, I mean, he just utilizes that speed out there so well. And on top of that, he was named the Florida State League Player of the Week, and he was also given our CBN award for, or honor rather, for being the top Canadian baseball player playing professionally right now. So it's been quite a ride for him so far, and let's just hope that he can maintain this level of success he's exhibited so far early in this season.
Agreed, and I think we should get into that interview right now. All right, thanks again for being here, Dalton. I appreciate you taking the time to come on the show.
No problem.
So before we talk about this year and your recent accomplishments, I wanted to ask you about your time before you were drafted and the teams that you played for here in Canada. First question I have for you, and I'm curious what your most memorable experience was pre-draft.
Probably playing for the junior Canadian national team. That's part of the reason why I got drafted, you know, but being on that team, I don't think I would have been seen by scouts and had the opportunity to be here. So I'd probably say being on that team, and more specifically, the World Junior Championships in Thunder Bay, like that was a great experience to play against all those other national teams with, you know, Cuba, USA, Chinese Taipei, Korea, all those teams. And, you know, pretty much go against some of the best high school kids from their respective countries was an awesome experience for me. And I took a lot from it, and it's really helped me carry over into professional baseball when I was 17 years old and I didn't really know much about it. So it was a big help, and it helped in my development.
Did you go down? You went down to the Dominican Republic with the junior national team as well on their annual trip there, correct?
Yeah. We went down there too. That was a cool experience too, just to see how they live and what they have to go through just to get to America, and it's a lot different down there. Like baseball is a lot different. Life itself is a lot different. So I can definitely respect where they come from and the grind they have to go through just to get here.
Absolutely.
You had an opportunity while you were playing with the junior national team there, or the World Junior Championships. You were playing for Greg Hamilton. Maybe tell us what that was like for playing with a guy like him, for a guy like him, rather.
He's a great guy. He's a great teacher. You know, he understands that, you know, a lot of, you know, don't know much about the game. I mean, we think we do when we're playing travel ball and stuff because, you know, one of the best players and whatnot on our teams. But once we get there and you know, the game speeds up and, you know, he teaches us a lot of stuff, like, mentally that's not as physical in the game. Maybe different situations where you have to think ahead or understanding yourself as a player and dealing with the ups and downs, because growing up, I didn't really feel that much because I was one of the better players. But once I got into an environment like that, it was tough for me, to deal with those failures and whatnot. So he was there, and he was a big help for me and a big supporter for me. And my overall decision to play professional baseball, because I had a meeting with him, and he gave me some great advice on how to separate myself from other guys that also get drafted, so I can have a chance to one day play in the big league. So I have to, credit Greg for all he's done for me, and I'll never forget it.
Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your time in Mississauga. I grew up in Mississauga myself, and I'm just curious. You played with the Oakville Royals, right? And
yes.
You also worked with the Mississauga North Tigers. Talk to me a little bit about the time that you spent with those teams in Mississauga and in Oakville, and some of your favorite memories from back then.
I had played for the Mississauga North Tigers for most of my youth career, and then I had played for the majors, Mississauga majors, for 2 years before I played for the Oakville Royals, which was when I was in grade 10. It was a great experience. When I was on the Tigers, we were basically the best team in Ontario repeatedly. So, it felt great to be a winner, right? I didn't want to be on a team that was losing all the time, which I was when I used to play in Brampton, which was a long time ago. But I played with a lot of great players on that team. Some still play, some play in college in the States, and then some eventually went to hockey. But I actually played with Dave Brohl. He's like one of the Toronto Maple Leafs prospects for NHL. I think he played in the NHL this year or something like that. But, I played for Dwayne Irvin too, and he was a good coach, and he helped me get better over there. And then I played for Chris Black, who was the head coach of the majors, and we had a pretty strong team because we had guys from all over playing on that team. And when I was on the Tigers, I didn't play that much near the end of my time there because the coach thought, there was better options than me. I didn't believe that, so I ended up leaving, went to the majors, and I played my first year, and then the same thing happened. It was sort of like politics issues and whatnot, but regardless, that only drove me to be a better player. And then I had options I could have went to, Ontario Blue Jays, Team Ontario, all those travel ball teams, but I chose to go to Oakville because I felt like I would get the most playing experience and the ability to make myself better. So I chose Oakville, even though they didn't have the best talent. But the coaches, they were really dedicated to helping me get better as a person and a player. And, I still have great relationships with them and all my teammates from that organization. And, I couldn't be more thankful for what they did. Derek Rothwell, he was one of the coaches on the 18-year-old team who actually got me an invite an invite-only MLB Bureau camp, and that's where Greg saw me and a couple other scouts, and that's basically how the ball started rolling. So without those guys, I wouldn't be here right now. So I'm very thankful for that and grateful.
How did you deal with those politics being so young? I mean, how did you perceive that? Did you understand it in its entirety back then, exactly why you weren't playing and the internal politics of Ontario baseball, or was it more, your parents and your coaches that helped you to understand exactly what was going on there?
Not really. I mean, it was really tough for me because I knew I was one of the better players on the team, and I didn't understand why I wasn't playing, And my dad was really outspoken when I was young, so he liked to voice his opinion a lot, and a lot of the people around didn't really like that, so they kind of took it out on me, and I didn't play because of him, which I understand, and I'm happy that he stood up for me, because no one else would have. Now it's pretty irrelevant, but back then it was definitely tough, and my parents had to explain to me what was going on, and they tried their best to get me on different teams and whatnot so I could continue to play and not have to worry about all that stuff. But yeah, it definitely affected me more mentally than physically, because I would always put the work in. I knew that. I just had to wait for my right opportunity and right setup where I could be successful, and I found that in Oakville. And then, yeah, everything's good.
You mentioned how your father played a large role, you know, just being outspoken throughout your younger career. I know they also helped you, you know, kind of make the decision to be a switch hitter. Do you want to touch on that a little bit and maybe how they motivated you to do that at such a young age?
My mom had read in the magazine when I was, you know, really young. I think I was like 2 or 3 years old, that it's good to make your son a switch hitter because of the advantages, obviously. So I started doing that. I think I started hitting left-handed first, like a week before, because my parents figured I was right-handed, so I'd be a right-handed thrower, right-handed hitter. So I started hitting left-handed first, and then I hit right-handed like a week later. Growing up, I would just alternate sides, so no matter who was pitching, it was a left-handed pitcher, right-handed pitcher, didn't matter. I would hit left-handed, right-handed, just to try to keep both as sharp as I could. And, you know, constant hours in the batting cages and dry swings and whatnot, working on my switch hitting ability. And it was tough, you know, especially when I had to, when I started getting into, like, professional baseball and Team Canada, where I could basically only hit against one side. So right-handed pitcher, I'd hit left-handed, and left-handed pitcher, I hit right-handed. And I wasn't used to doing that, so I'd say my right-handed swing struggled a little bit because it wasn't getting the consistent reps that it once got. So it's still a constant battle for me to try and get as many reps as I can, and, you know, see a BP thrower when I can, or, you know, whatever can help me try to maintain both sides. It's definitely tough because most guys just have to worry about one side, and I got to do to worry about. But that's just life of a switch hitter, and I'll continue to switch hit as long as I play.
Right. Well, it's a credit to you being able to make it as far as you have, you know, and have the ability to switch it. It's definitely it's a great thing to have within the organization, especially coming up through the ranks. I wanted to ask you, you obviously being a Canadian, you were later on drafted by the Blue Jays. Maybe touch on that, on what it's like to know that there's an entire country in your corner rather than maybe just a city or a state behind you. You know, you really have an entire country of devoted baseball fans watching your progression through the minor leagues. How does that feel?
Well, when I was drafted, I didn't really, I wouldn't say care, but it didn't kick in until after. You know, I just heard my name called, and I was excited. I went from 3 months before, like, no one knew who I was, to getting drafted. And then slowly, probably about 5 or 10 minutes later, I just felt like an eternity. I realized it was the Blue Jays that picked me, and then it kind of set in, you know. I went to the games growing up, and I had no idea that I would eventually even have the opportunity to be there one day. And for that, that made it so much more special for me, and it makes me work so much harder just to think about having, you know, my friends, family, and all that stuff at the games, and basically me playing at home because, you know, from there. So, and also with the support of, you know, other Canadian people, I already have a lot, you know, on Twitter and stuff like that, people, you know, from all over supporting me. And a lot of my teammates don't understand that, you know, where they're from. You know, they could be from Atlanta, Baltimore, wherever. You know, they, like you said, they just have, you know, a state sort of, or a city cheering for them. But when you have the whole country cheering for you, it's a little different. And because there's only one team. So a lot of guys don't understand that. But, you know, I definitely do. growing up and knowing there's only, you know, one baseball team. So I take a lot of pride in what I do, and, you know, I work hard towards that goal, knowing that, you know, the whole country could be watching and I could be representing my country playing for the Blue Jays, and, you know, just like Brett Lawrie is doing, and like you're doing what I'm doing, I'll have a pretty good shot at doing that.
Yeah. You were drafted by Jamie Lehman, right? Did you know it was going to be the Blue Jays? Did you have a strong indication from them and from Jamie before the draft that they were going to pick you, or was it more up in the air between them and some other teams?
Well, it was a couple teams. It was mostly the Oakland A's, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Blue Jays, and then there was a couple other teams that called me last minute, but those were basically the big three. Jamie, you know, showed a lot of interest going into the draft, but it was his first draft as a scout, so he wasn't sure how much. And he told me the story, and I know about it. So basically what happened was first, Milwaukee called, like, the sixth round or something like that, and told me that they were going to pick me. Caleb was a scout. They ended up not picking me. They ended up picking my teammate, Joe Pierce, who's a pitcher. And then the A's called me, like, the ninth round, said they were going to pick me, and they never picked me. So I was listening. 15th round goes by. You know, I wanted to stop listening to the draft and whatnot, but my parents continued to listen. And, you know, I ended up getting picked. But the next round, Jamie was telling me this story about how he was in the draft room and he was pushing for them to pick me, and they never picked me. And the 15th round came by, and then it finished. And Alex Anthopoulos or Andrew Tate, one of the two, came up to him and asked if he – who he wanted more, which was me or Evan Rutschke, who's a pitcher with the Yankees right now. And, you know, he said me. So they ended up picking me that next round. And he still says it's the best decision he's made so far in his scouting career. So, you know, I'm very grateful for the opportunity and Jamie believing in me so much, you know, when a lot of scouts were pretty skeptical.
Sure. We're taking a look at your professional career to date. You've always been a batter who's, you know, hit about 260, but you've always gotten on base a lot. And generally when you get on base, you know, you end up stealing. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about your style? Like maybe if there was one, you know, maybe tool or element of your game that you're most proud of or you think is your strongest element, maybe just touch on that a little bit.
Like offensively?
Sure, offensively, defensively, either or.
Well, I think offensively for me, winning that award, I take a lot of pride in that. I always have, you know, when I'm not hitting, I feel like I can offer some sort of value to the team from playing defense and can put me in the lineup every night. And that's really important to me to show that I'm not just but my offensive stats, so once my at-bats are over, I'm willing to go on the field and make plays for my team. I've been like that for a long time now. And also, I guess offensively, I could say my ability to get on base. You know, I like to use my speed because my speed helps my team. I'm on first base, you know, and I'm trying to steal the base. My teammates get a lot more fastballs in because obviously it's easier for the catcher to throw, which essentially helps them. And then it helps me, too, because, you know, they can score me in with a double or whatnot, or I can steal the base and then they can score me. So, you know, my speed kind of changes the game sometimes. And as well, it helps pick my team up. You know, I hit first or second in the lineup. When I get on base, four guys, you know, it gets them up. It gets them, you know, I can't think of the word, but... yeah, it helps the overall energy of the team. And, you know, whether it's a walk, hit, reach on error, like I leave that stuff in the past once the bat's over, and now I'm on base. Now I use my base running ability and my speed to try to help my team win, and I've been doing that for the past 4 years, and it's been working out.
You mentioned winning the Gold Glove. Along with the Gold Glove, you've also been named the Florida State League Player of the Week. You're certainly mentioned on the Canadian Baseball Network as the top Canadian Player of the Week in the minor leagues. How are you dealing with all of this this attention that's kind of been brought onto you now? Because when you started the season, it's not that people, you know, may have not known who you are, but now you've been thrust into this sort of can't-miss prospect limelight. How's that going for you, and how are you coping with the amount of attention?
I wouldn't say I'm, like, surprised by it because, I don't want to sound cocky, but I've always believed in my ability. You know, it was just my consistency with it that I battled with and mentally, you know, preparing myself every day and getting over the failures, because last year I really struggled with both of those, mentally and being consistent on the field. You know, when I showed up to play, I thought I was a pretty good player, you know, and this year I feel like I've become more consistent with both of those. And, you know, people are finally starting to notice. People that have seen me play before, you know, they know that it's, you know, the ability is there. It's just for it to come out every day. And it's starting to, which is really positive for me. I just have to obviously keep it going, which I plan on doing. But no, the attention, it doesn't really bother me as much. I don't really pay attention to it as much, but I do at the same time, because I really like to hear what people have to say, whether it's good or bad, because it only helps me. You know, constructive criticism is always used as motivation for me to better myself. You know, if someone says something bad about me, I want to know what they have to say, and then if I agree with it or not, I'll work on it. If not, then, you know, I know it's right. Or people that do believe in me, you know, I just want to prove them, you know, that they're right. So, you know, their early recognition is really nice. And hopefully I can keep it going and show these people, you know, what I can do over the course of the whole year.
Sure. Now you mentioned, you know, obviously being more consistent this season. Is there anything that you've changed in your approach, you know, be it at the plate? Because now you're hitting, I think it's 363 last time I checked, pretty much, you know, leading the world in batting average there. Was there anything that you did in the off season that, you know, made you, you know, make an adjustment or something that's, you know, benefited your career or your season to this point?
I've just tried to leave the whole mechanics part of hitting and the work in the batting cage is in the batting cage. And once I get into the game, I just try to see the ball and hit the ball and go back to basics. You know, it's easy to, you know, get tied up in, you know, where my hands are, where my foot lands, all that stuff when you're in the batter's box. When the guy's going, you know, 92, 95, you're not going to be able to see it. So when I get in the box, I just try to see the ball, and I remind myself to see the ball. You know, back to ball with two strikes, and that's really helped me, you know, take off. Just all my mechanics and stuff, just play, and I don't have to worry about them. Also, my bunting ability. Last year, I really struggled with bunting, and I never really worked on it, you know, consistently, or had any technique towards doing it. So I was just really skeptical of not using it last year. This past off season, I worked on it. In an instructional league, I worked on it with guys like Robbie Alomar and Sandy Alomar's dad and Doug Davis, who's the field coordinator with the Blue Jays. I thought it was a good idea that I practiced it consistently and at least try it once a game. I have been. It's been working out so far. I think I have like 4 bunt hits. Also changes the defense, because once I bunt one time, then the infield, you know, changes how they play. They play me in a little bit more, and then, you know, I hit a ball hard on the ground and can get past the infielder. So it's been changing the game for me a little bit.
Absolutely.
You also, I read about how you also recently worked with Tim Raines on some base stealing instruction. Talk to me a little bit about what you learned from him.
Yeah, Tim's a good guy. He obviously has a lot of experience, and I try to take whatever I can from him. He's really big on, you know, first step. You know, first step can determine whether or not you're safe or out. So really reaction time, understanding yourself. He's really big on that, understanding where she can and you can't run on, because, you know, just because it's fast doesn't mean you can steal a base, because guys can throw, guys can hold, and whatnot. Knowing the situation, don't just steal a base, just steal a base, and steal a base, score a run. So he's really big on that, and what else here, let me think. Stealing third, you know, making sure you can steal a base, pretty close to 100%, and not just, you know, getting thrown out because you're already in scoring position. So a lot of the stuff, because the party it's the stuff around it, and being a smart base runner, can really help you. Takes a long way in stealing bases, but also scoring runs. So he's been really productive with that, and really appreciate that side of it, because I didn't know a lot of that stuff and I didn't understand myself. So I struggled a little bit at first, but once I got the hang of it, I've been pretty successful since then.
Is there any goals, things that you want to work towards this season, maybe something in your game that you want to improve upon before, you know, the end of the year?
I can improve on everything. I really want to get better at my bunting, because I'm really only good at bunting to one side. To the third base, I haven't really explore bunting to the other side, so I have to work on that. Ground balls in the outfield, I'm not the strongest at. You know, my footwork gets off, so my arms, legs, and whatnot, so sometimes my throws are off, even though I have a good arm. But my body doesn't put me in the right position to throw, so I struggle with that. So I've been working on that a lot. That's basically it in terms of really focusing on stuff. I mean, I continue to do what I've been doing. Offensively, like, bad, in the outfield, too, right? So.
Great. I wanted to ask you about replay and maybe get your thoughts on that. I mean, it's something that, you know, baseball is trying out this year. It's definitely a flawed system that we've seen to this point. Maybe let's get your take on that, you know, as a player in the minor leagues. How does it feel?
I don't really agree with it. I think they should go back to how it was, because I get the whole thing about getting the call right, and, you know, if you're safe, you're safe. You're out, you're out. But in the minor leagues, I mean, to be honest, guys get screwed all the time. You know, bang, bang, call, you know you're safe, and he calls you out. Or, you know, close play, if you catch the ball, like, no one knows, but they call you out. Or a home run, you know, looks fair, but it ends foul, you know, they call a foul, whatever. But that's just how it is, you know. People are imperfect, and I know, I understand how you should get the call right, but, I mean, that's just what the game of baseball is, you know. So
yeah.
I don't think they should take away the authenticity of it and just let, you know, people's judgment take over, and not, because I feel like sometimes it could be embarrassing, you know, for the umpires when they get the call wrong. You know, it's tough for them too.
True.
That's just a part of the game, you know. Calls going your way and calls not going your way. And you see it in the minor leagues all the time, because, you know, the umpires aren't that great. They're not major league umpires, so they're learning too. If they were to do it, I feel like they should do it in the minor leagues so they can learn what they're doing wrong. And then once you get to the big leagues, you know, they have a pretty good grasp of what they're doing. But, I mean, in the big leagues, I don't think they need it. I think they should just take it away.
No, that's a good point. You know, when they did roll it out in spring training, I think they only had, you know, a small handful of games in which they could kind of, you know, try to knock out the system beforehand. They definitely should have tried it out, you know, before it was causing an effect on some of the major league teams. And like you say, you see guys get, you know, they get calls break outside of their favor all the time, and it's tough to watch. But, you know, I think they're going to get over it, and it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward. I wanted to ask you just quickly, do you still follow the major league teams? Do you follow the Blue Jays a lot? Is that something that happens in the clubhouse in Florida?
Yeah, I mean, we try to put the Blue Jay games on and watch. I think we have MLB TV in the clubhouse, so whenever they're playing, we try to watch. But I follow them because, you know, obviously I know a couple of guys on the team from either them playing here at rehab or talking to them before, so I like to see how everybody's doing.
One more question I wanted to ask you is just about dealing with injuries. I know you had to overcome some injuries recently, and you've more than overcome them into this season. But talk to me a little bit about what you go through and how you dealt with it personally when you're off and you're not playing and you're rehabbing, and how that was for you.
Well, I had broken both my hand bones and my hands. The one most people know about was in 2012 when I was in Vancouver playing and I had gotten hurt. But I broke my right hamate bone the year before in 2011, but it was during spring training, and I was going to extend spring training anyway. So I had broken both. Last season, last month, I had broken my toe, so I was playing with a broken toe, so it was tough for me to run. The injury is, you know, it's pretty devastating mentally. The first time I had gotten injured and really suffered a significant injury, it was tough mentally on me because, you know, other guys were on the field there and I was stuck in training room and only cast on and whatnot or rehabbing. It could be tough on a lot of guys too, especially with so many guys and, you know, trying to separate yourself, like I said earlier. It could be really hard on you. The first time I had gotten injured, I didn't really know how to handle it. I had the support of my family, obviously, and they helped me get back quicker. The second time I did it, I kind of understood the ropes to coming back from it. So that wasn't really as tough on me, but it was because it was still during the season, so I missed a bunch of time. I only played in like 20 games or so that year. And then when I had broken my toe, I was out 3 or 4 games, and I just couldn't handle sitting on the bench for so long, so I just taped it together, and I just, you know, I was hobbling around a little bit, but, you know, I wanted to play. I didn't want to sit on the bench for that extended period of time because, you know, you want to be out there playing as much as you can because this is all experience that's going to help you later on in your career. Even so now, like, when I have nagging injuries, you know, like little stuff, I really try to take care of it earlier. I really focus on, you know, stretching and all that stuff to help keep me away from these injuries so I can stay on the field. I mean, even if something's bothering me, I try to play through it because a lot of guys play through it. You know, you tell a trainer that, you know, you're injured, your neck's sore or something. Next thing you know, you're on the 7-day DL and you're not playing, and then, you know, someone else, you know, comes in and does well, and then they take your job in a sense. So you really just try to push through stuff, and you know, that's what baseball is. It's just a grind, so you just got to grind it out.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Dalton, for coming on the show. I want to wish you all the best this season and hope that the success you've had early on continues throughout this year and indefinitely.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me.
And with that, we'll end today's episode. I'd like to thank Dalton Pompey for coming on the show, especially with such short notice. I'd also like to thank Effective Business Video for the production. Without them, there would be no Canadian Baseball Network podcast. And the Isotopes for the music for our show. Make sure you check them out on iTunes. If you have any suggestions for the podcast, please send us an email, podcast@CanadianBaseballNetwork.com. I'm Peter Bean with Andrew Hendricks. Thanks for listening to the show. We'll talk to you next time.